Call to order a special meeting of the Unalaska City Council. And I'll call to order at 6:02 PM, Monday, April 11th. I'll ask, who did it last? Tom, read our mission statement.
Sure. City of Unalaska mission statement: to provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. City Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Certainly, sir. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Looby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Present.
Mr. Tungle?
Here.
Mr. Tudyakov?
Here. You got everybody? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Do have a quorum? All present? Please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, please.
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Looby. If there are any objections, with no objections, the agenda is adopted. We have a motion and a second to go into a work session.
Move to go into a work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Coleman. Hearing no objection, we are in work session at 6:05. I'll turn it over to the Assistant City Manager to introduce the discussion.
Well, yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. The first topic for discussion is the FY 23 to 32 capital and major maintenance plan. And Bill Hopke is here to discuss the CMP with everybody.
Good evening, everyone. I'll give you a yes or no question. Do you want me to go through all the projects like I did last time, or you want me to just go over the few changes that we had?
Every word.
Every word? You sure? I can drag it out. All right. So since we met last, we listened to the comments, and then I scribbled on the draft that I had and went back and we talked with people. And the few projects that have changed were we've moved the public restroom up into fiscal year 23 for the design engineering for that project. The equipment storage building that honestly has been on the CMMP and kept getting pushed back. I think several of you wanted that brought forward, so it would help protect some of the equipment that we already own. We amended the Captain's Bay Road project, and honestly, that was with the help of finance, because there was just, you know, before we did the last presentation, you all were passing, I think, budget amendments that changed the numbers. So that's deleted. It's about $900,000, I think, that's already funded through a budget amendment. So that number has changed for FY 23 and on. And the last is we did move, and this is the only one that I wasn't quite sure from my recollection, the PCR recreation study that we had in FY 24 for $100,000. We were going to move that forward to 23. And that was, if you recall, we had the advisory committee was here. They would like to have that done. And I don't remember any kind of consensus on that. I think it kind of got lost in some other discussion. So that's up as well. I didn't change the number. We had talked about making it 150 instead of 100, but it shows as 100 right now. So I thought that's one that I know it would be nice to have a study going, and so we can understand what our future expenses or programs, et cetera, might be while we have these other projects. Certainly not. The reason it's on there is there were several PCR projects, including the pool, and when I was looking over one, I thought we probably should really have someone come and take a holistic view of some of these, because I don't think everyone out here is a tennis pro or a pool pro, and I think some of the standards and things that we want to work to, it'd be nice to have people that really know what those requirements are before we start making changes. So that was the idea behind having that study funded at all. But I did not change the money amount to 150 because, honestly, I couldn't remember what the will was of the council. Those are the biggest changes that I have for the CMMP. And some of you are looking like, well, what about the other 25 we gave you? Did you lose them? I don't remember. I don't think so. I'm happy to take questions.
Any council have any questions? I'll start off with Councilman Luby and then go down the list.
So the study for the recreation for Parks and Recreation, is that a study that we're going to do? It's going to be an outside study?
We'd have to hire out. That's the whole point of it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And it's kind of just to see what our needs are or just maybe explain a little bit what kind of study it is.
Well, I think, you know, we have several kinds of programs and facilities. Do they match our programs, number one? And looking forward, I think they help facilitate kind of that recreational component. What are the needs? What is in the future? And then how do you gear towards that? And there's trade-offs, you know, and I think, I don't know if Roger's here, but, I mean, they have to make budgetary and project decisions as we go. And most communities would have a parks and rec plan as a component of their own plan that would be prepared by professionals that could help speak to that more. You don't want a generalized recreation plan. I mean, aside from where a path might go, let me just give you the example. So, you know, I was the high school swim coach, and I know something about swimming regulations, and our pool is not regulation size depth at the short end of the pool. And there was a pool project on there and talking about trying to encourage more meets. And I thought, well, we'd never get a sanctioned swim meet out here because the pool doesn't meet that. So it's little things like that, I mean, some of us know a little bit about each thing, but it would be nice. We're not on the mainland. We don't have people coming and going off for us tips all the time, et cetera, for different programs. So I think we would really be the benefit of having someone come out that can do that and see what we have and what it would take. And then we can decide if, you know, we want to move on this project or put our resources towards this one. Do we want to build two ice rinks? Because there's going to be all this electricity that we're going to need to burn up on the city level. So those take up like 4 gigawatts a year. You know, those types of things. That is probably what we need someone to really look at. And I'm sure Roger would be happy to speak to it more. But
okay,
it's
yeah.
The one element everyone on the island uses.
Oh, no, I agree. Yeah. I agree. One of the best things we have going here is our parks and recreation.
Right.
It keeps everybody entertained. It keeps our children entertained. You don't want the kids being idle. So I think it's good. I was just curious if, you know, what it entailed and who was going to do it. So thank you.
Hey, thank you, Councilman Coleman.
Rolling stock. You ready for that one?
Is Tom on the phone by chance? Okay, that's for Tom.
So I looked in vain for the rolling stock that was presented prior to the one that I have in front of me, which would be in the final. And I was looking at some previous, the very first draft of CMMP. It has a rolling stock of $290,000. And this one is a $404,000. So I'm wondering what the difference from the first version to the last version was.
Yeah, Tom, are you on the line?
Yeah, this is Director Conner. I don't have those exact previous numbers in front of me, or what the configuration of the vehicle was, but we usually base our initial rolling stock on estimates, and then as we move closer towards the adoption of the CNMP, we get the numbers refined closer to an actual quote. And our supply division supervisor, Trudy, works with the state to get price quotes and to narrow the actual cost down. And oftentimes, as you know, things are escalating, especially lately.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask city manager, can I get an exact on that from the very first? Was there additions to vehicles or addition to types or what they were? Was there, I guess that's the first question, was there addition to the stock there from the first?
No, there was not. And just to clarify, are you referring to the service truck for facility maintenance?
I don't know what I am because I didn't have the exact, I just had a number for rolling stock. So I couldn't find what exactly you had available and how much you had estimated it at. And so this would have been early on, the very first.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty significant difference.
Yeah, no, I agree. The police vehicles were way underestimated initially, and we got some closer numbers. We had to bump those up quite a bit for the police, the three police vehicles.
Okay, and then maybe the we have a forklift and then the 2-ton service truck. Did those come in pretty close to what the initial estimate was?
We have not been able to get actual estimates from anybody, much to our frustration. As we get closer to the final adoption, I'm hoping we'll have some more solid numbers. But there, in some cases, they've been reluctant to hold their pricing even for a week. So I cannot give you a hard and fast number. It's very frustrating for us as well.
Okay, thank you. I want to caution if that's the trend, then these could, you know, go up as we get closer. So that's a little concerning. So thank you. I think my comments moving forward or any reflection moving forward is going to be based on the fact that I just got to see the budget for the first time. And you know, and it leads me to a big concern about our spending, and namely our planning for our 10-year project. And I'm going to leave probably most of those comments when we actually get to the budget. I don't have anything really specific on the budget outlay other than, you know, this ever-increasing desire to have projects and spend money that we don't have or that we're not being able to generate current revenue for. And everybody likes to, you know, all these projects are important, but we have to start deciding what is most important and what best serves, you know, fits this community in the long run. Obviously, we've committed to some, and I'm going to sit here and say, you know, 3.4, 3.5 million out of general fund going to ports is a big honking, you know, bit of money. But we set our course on that one years ago, and we're committed to it, and I'm committed to that one too. But you start to look at these other projects that are coming up, a big money project, we need to seriously think about, is this the plan we really want for ourselves? And can we afford it? And can we pay out? Because I think once you start down that road, you kind of have to start on that road. So, yeah, I don't know when it comes to budget time where I'm at. I don't think I particularly can approve this particular CMMP. for one thing, you know, Captain's Bay. So I read through the cost-benefit analysis, and again, this probably come up tomorrow because it's there tomorrow. But we've got more money going out to them from our general fund. And I've okayed previous allocations out of general fund to this project, but I'm stopping here. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore until I see a very clear plan on where we're going to go with Captain's Bay, or if we're going to go down that road, so to speak. So, $564,000, not going to approve it. So unless this was, for me, a grants-only wish, and right now it's looking like it's might be grant, going to be us. So I guess unless I see a better plan or a vision on Captain's Bay improvement and where the city really wants to go and how it benefits every community member, I'm not going to continue to approve funds allocated out of general fund for that project. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Bell.
Yeah, let me, there's a couple things here I got some notes on. First of all was the PCR study. And looking over the what we have over the next couple of years are pretty much a lot of maintenance type projects where I don't believe that study is necessarily going to benefit us in any way on those. If we were going to spend $100,000 this year, I think the skate park, or you've got it listed as the pump track, I'm not sure what that is, but I think would be a better use of funds because it creates an immediate benefit and quality of life for those dollars spent. Let's see. A couple other notes here I have on the dredging project where we're doing dredging along the face of the docks is just a question on how much that adds to the port's proprietary funds and what potential rate increases would need to be made in order to pay for those.
I don't have a definite number for you on that, Councilman Bell. It should not add a great deal. There's not a lot of material. The permitting should align with what's going on with the Corps of Engineers. All that is time to be together. What's important about those projects is the commitment we have to the container and tanker industry, particularly for UMC. If we are going to dredge the entrance channel to be deep draft, we also need to have deep draft facilities. The UMC is at 40 feet mean lower low water. It needs to be 45 to be truly deep draft. So there's not a tremendous amount of dredging, and the idea is that the materials should be able to be dredged from the dock face and literally dumped several yards out where it deepens pretty quickly. But the numbers are still in flux. We'll be doing some geotech work there and also at the cruise ship dock site here this spring and summer when the Corps brings out some more geotech work, and we'll have some more definitive answers.
Yeah, that one's kind of a it's kind of a complicated one, and I didn't necessarily. It's listed at, under a proprietary fund in the on this chart, and will it add debt to that proprietary fund, and how much would we need to increase the rates if it does?
That's where. So it won't add debt. It will be paid for out of the fund, but we won't take on debt to do so. And that will be depreciated. It should not have any great maintenance schedule with that. It should be kind of a one and done. It does not tend to fill in there. It's just where the natural contour is today. So we're going to bring that down to a little bit deeper, and we should be done with it. It should not affect rates long term. That shouldn't be a factor that goes into it. What impacts rates are the cost of maintaining facilities, doing maintenance on facilities, and of course what the users bring to that. But that project in and of itself should not drive an increase.
Okay. I'm not picking on ports in particular. I was going to go through this with different funds. And if we depreciate it, it adds cost to that fund. And somehow that cost needs to be made up. And I'll have the same kind of question with the water tank. And even though that's listed as next year's project, we've got in here $600,000, I believe. Yeah, $603,000 in the proprietary fund, which I believe is engineering and design. My questions then become, is since that will increase our capacity, I get all that and some of the benefits that are listed in there, it will provide 0% increase in revenues. We're not selling any more water. We're just creating more storage. So same kind of question. That'll be depreciated over how many ever years, which will increase the overall budget for that proprietary fund. What rate increases would we need to make in order to recover those costs in there?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Councilman Bell, this Steve Tompkins, acting director. First of all, I hope that we don't actually build the tank. What we want to do is extend water service out to the Crowley dock, and then that will eliminate the need for the tank, the second tank, because we will have about a two-month window where we can actually do maintenance on the one tank. I think we can get by with one tank. So it's my intention, my hope, that we can completely do away with the tank. So the question would be, why is it on the CMMP? It's because if I don't have it on there, and if somehow we can't have that water project go out to the Crowley dock, then I have funds in place where I can get the engineering done. As a proprietary fund, that if we don't spend it, it just goes back into the proprietary fund. Certainly, if we build it, although water, if we want to talk about a utility, water is almost a poster child for utility. We had a 6% one-time increase on this rate survey. I'm planning to spend money in water, and so I cut a $1.3 million road building project in water and another $1 million valve service in water to try to give us some room in water. Water can take on proprietary, it can take on fund projects like that. We did the microturbine project, and so we didn't really have a rate increase to take that under. The water tank's a bigger animal, but it's something we could plan for and execute if we had to. But my expectation is that we won't have to.
Yeah, and I would agree, and I would see where that could be pushed off a year or two, or at least a year, before we start doing anything with it. And then, while you're up there, the gasifier, same type of question, is once again, I forget what it is, an $8 million project or $9 million, whatever it is, and obviously that's going to get depreciated over so many years, which will increase the cost in that proprietary fund. And since we basically put a Band-Aid on the rate increases this last time, and we'll still be looking at that down the road, is how will this add to that? And what is the real time frame we need on that gasifier?
I applied for a grant for the DOE to help us again in evaluating our request for proposals packet, and right now I'm drafting the RFP, and they're going to vet the RFP, and then we're going to put it out to the technology providers. There's a number of different ways to gasify garbage. It's really actually pretty cool. Most certainly, we're going to try to get grant funding. And it will have an impact. But we've been planning for it for a while. I stopped recycling nets because nets burn really good, and that saves a bunch of money. We're just piling them up, because once we get a gasifier, that's your start right there, a bundle of nets. So we've been planning. That's kind of my strategy. Also, out at the solid waste facility, I cut a $900,000 upgrade that I didn't feel like we needed. It's just a matter of planning. It's going to be expensive, but we're working to minimize the impact. Solid waste, as you know, isn't really the poster child. Our rates did have to go up, but we got a good crew, and we control our costs where we can.
And then I know we touched on this a little bit last time, and I just was going to ask again, is the gasifier can be done in a time frame where we don't have to do a big capital outlay to expand and do the larger cell that encompasses the whole, basically the whole landfill footprint?
Yeah, I would want to, I mean, I'm hoping that we're all done. We've awarded our contracts. We've gone through our selection process, and we can build next year. And that'll give us, you know, a number of years. I think 2027, 2028 is when we'd have to go for another cell. So I think we can, I certainly want to avoid that. And I heard council members last time and the time before talking about, you know, I know it's a concern up here. So, you know, it's on my radar for sure.
Just to put a dollar figure to that, is there any estimate on what it'd take to build that new cell?
Probably a couple million dollars. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
Councilman Tungle.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for putting this together. This is a lot helpful it makes a lot more clearer than previously. The concern I got is the FY23 on the rolling stock. We got about 404,000 this year, and then now we're going into next year with 1,690,000. Well, I was hoping that some of the equipment that are really needed can be put on this year and cut up the 2024 one, so we don't have a big number for next year. And on the CMMP project, a lot of this project is to benefit the community, and we got to protect what we got, and the safety, a lot of safety issue that we're looking at, and planning for this 10 years is always a good thing. We don't have to do all the what we put in there. It depends on when we get in there if we have available funds or not. But today we have a good the symposium. We got a good presentation with all the feds, federal grants that they have available, and working with the trilateral, we can get a lot of grants. We can apply on a lot of them, and there's a lot of money, and everybody's surprised how much money are they putting out there. Especially the small community. So I will keep pretty much everything on this CMMP, and I'll be supporting this. This looks good to me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Tungo. Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was very pleased to hear about the solid waste gasifier. I'm happy to see that moving forward, and I'm anxious to see that go into place. All the changes that we've had for the public restrooms, equipment storage, Captain's Bay utilities, and the PCR funding, everything on the CMP is very good, and I will support this. It's something we have to do. I know it's a trying year coming up with all the quotas cut and stuff like that, but if we don't spend the money now, we're going to be spending the money in the next prior years. So, you know, I'm in support of what we have now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. I have some of the same concerns as on the rolling stock that Councilman Tungle has, and I believe I've spoken to him about it also. We're looking at $1.69 million next year. We're going to have $404,000 this year, and we still have an $85,000 forklift on there. Mr. Konauer, if you don't mind, I'm going to send your email off to a person that'll give you a quote that'll be good for a long time on a forklift that can go inside and outside. But $85,000, that's almost a 12-ton forklift in the market today. So with I've heard some concern on the rec, Parks and Rec planning study. Failing to plan is planning to fail. I think these studies, when we have the money, we need to do that. But we also need the folks to understand that we may not be able to fund them, the project, soon. This, you know, I suppose I can point to the library project as one. I mean, I've supported the project. I thought it was great. But then I got buyer's remorse at an $8 million price tag for an addition. And I think that could have done a whole lot better for a brand new world-class facility in a different location. But that's water under the bridge. The water tank, I think that is something that we still need to pursue, not just hold it there as a placeholder. But we have, I suppose every year, it Mother Nature throws a curveball at us. When we have some years that we have plenty of snow packed for water during the bee season, and then there's those years that we don't have that much. But we need that extra storage tank to be able to capture some of the runoff from that facility in Pyramid Valley, because we cannot and we should not take it out of Unalaska Valley. Because the question could be raised that you are messing with an hydronymous stream by taking too much water out. I've seen over my lifetime here the drastic change that little creek has taken, and I think it has a lot to do with the water that we're pumping out of the valley. Some people say no, but I say I saw the change when we started doing it. And we have one was supposed to have been a test well, the fourth well out there. It was supposed to only be there for testing purposes. We're probably running the thing often. I think that water tank, we need to move forward with that, regardless whether we get the site, you know, one into to North Pacific Fuel, Captain's Bay. Just simply because of extra storage capacity when we will need it in the event we have a less of a snowpack. The dredging is critical. We, you know, if we look at another industry for this community, a lot of it's probably going to have to do with transshipments. And our port facility, in many ways, and I think that's something that we need to do. Dredging the light cargo dock is critically important, so we can, you know, as we start getting vessels into the city dock that may be larger and utilizing that more, we're still going to have to move fish. And that's where the light cargo dock dredging project comes in good. And the one thing that makes it all worthwhile is not having to mobilize the equipment for dredging. Doing it now, or planning for it now when the dredging material, the equipment's going to be out here, is going to save the city a lot of money. And that, more than anything, to me, sells it. But I think... you know, the public restrooms, that's a good thing. I think that's all I have at this point in time. I'm excited about the gasifier too, by the way. It needs to happen, so. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Are there any second round questions? Comments from council? Did you have a question, Bill? Oh, I thought you had a question mark there. Okay, thanks, Bill. We'll revisit this one tomorrow night. All right, next item on our work session. I guess the next one is we'll receive public comments, 3 minutes per person. Does anyone wish to speak? Anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay. We'll move on to item B, presentation of proposed FY23 departmental operating budgets. And I'll turn this over to JR. And
yes, Mr. Mayor and council members, Jim Sharp is here to discuss the fiscal year capital and operating budget, and he has a nice presentation for us.
Good evening. So my goal here tonight is to get through. I've got a PowerPoint presentation that you received today. I apologize for the delay in that. I was trying to get all the information together so that I wanted to provide or offer something a little bit different than what's already contained in the budget document and or in the memo. So my goal is to go through a couple of pages at a time, and then hopefully we can ask and pause and have a discussion and ask questions at that point. So Margie, go ahead and advance to the next slide. I thought these were fairly relevant comments, and I hope you all can see a little bit of humor in this as we go through and discuss the budget tonight. But I also, there's a couple of things that I wanted to, while this slide was up here, mention to you. We have spent, so Kelly Tompkins is the individual that works with our Crystal Reports, creating these draft budget reports that you have before you. And she and I, along with the city manager, have worked to try to provide a presentation, a draft budget, that hopefully lays the information out a little bit better, makes the and more clear, so that you can clearly see where certain items meet a budget goal, that sort of thing. And so I wanted to touch on a couple of items that you will see within the budget. So for example, on page 85 of the council packet, there were several changes that we've made. One of the items that we wanted to do, we noticed that between the draft budgets and the final budgets, the percentage change column was different. In the draft budgets, previously that was based on the original budget, where the final budget, that the draft, not the draft document, the final budget document included a percentage change off of the revised budget. We thought we'll just give them both to you, just so that you have a frame of reference for those. And I wanted to, in the summary budget, also on page 85, you'll see that we've broken the information out a little bit in terms of, we've given separate line items to debt service, community grant support, and school support. So you can more easily see those on a summary as opposed to having to dig into the detail. And we also separated capital outlay. We moved that below operating. The goal there was so you could see, council could see, and we could see really, that from an operational standpoint, we have a balanced budget or surplus. That is one of the council goals, and wanted to make sure that it clearly states that without having to go through a lot of mathematical gyrations to get there. And so I feel like we've done that. And then after that, we show the transfers to capital projects, capital outlay, and the bottom line shows that we have appropriated fund balance to make our balanced budget. So again, I hope that helps with being able to follow the thought process through and get an understanding as to where the costs are and what we're left with at the end of the day. The other item that I wanted to mention that was a specific change was packet. If you look on page 88 of the council packet, there's a new presentation there where we show just the non-personnel operating costs for each department in the general fund. And again, this was designed to clearly show that we have presented a budget to you that meets a council goal. And I believe that council goal is that the non-personnel operating budgets in the general fund would not increase by more than 3%. And you can clearly see that on that page. I wanted to pause here and ask if you have any specific questions regarding some of the changes. In terms of the content, I'll dig into that on the next slide. But I wanted to pause and see if there are any questions or concerns that folks had regarding the new presentation before you.
Any council member have a question for Jim? Question, comment? Go ahead, Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I like the way you put this together. Thank you. It's actually very nice, and it does break things out a lot better. And so I just wanted to say thank you. I appreciate it. I know it was a lot of work, and thank you.
Clearly, it was not designed to provide what we call a gap presentation. It's really more to show the information a little bit more clearly. So we've kind of circumvented some of that stuff.
Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. You know, from the number of calls I've been getting from businesses on property taxes increasing, it doesn't look like you have an increase of about 17.6%. Is that true overall from last year?
Yeah, I will get to the revenue portion. That's the next slide. Really, I just wanted to go through the changes to the presentation at this point, and then I'll get to the revenue piece next.
Thanks.
Okay, Margie, next slide. Much of this should look familiar. The amounts that you see here, again, so this is page 85 in the council packet. The information that you see here is just a different presentation than what you saw in January. And to give you the $8,350,000 for the property tax, the breakout is $6 million for the real property tax, which is a 26% increase. And the personal property tax, it remains the same. Personal property tax amounts are derived based on information provided by local industry related to the non-real estate that they own. And there wasn't a significant change from last year, so I left the budgeted amount where it was. There is one small difference between what you see here from a total standpoint and what you saw in January. And it's in that everything else category. We budget annually for the state contributed amount to the employee's PERS retirement. And in the last few years, we haven't made any changes to that from a revenue standpoint. We increased it this year to more accurately reflect what we really do receive. So that's the only change that from what you see here and what it was presented in January. Next slide, Margie. Again, no change. I have a couple of comments here. I don't really have anything to add to these comments because, again, we have talked about this. But I do, got one more slide. The way this is presented, this more closely aligns with the presentations on pages 86 and 87 of your council packet. And when I was having Margie review this, she had a question in terms of, hey, that taxes column doesn't really add up to the taxes that we charge our customers from the citizens. And this is truly based solely on the way the reports are laid out. Specifically, the fish tax money that we receive from the state is not shown under taxes. It's shown under intergovernmental revenue. Because it does come from the state. It is part of, when we think of compliance and our audit and that sort of thing, it is treated as a state-funded grant, so to speak. and is audited as such. So that's why we included under intergovernmental as opposed to taxes. And with that, I will pause.
Any questions? Anybody on the phone have a question? Okay. Okay, we'll continue.
Thank you. Okay. Next slide, Margie. This is a snapshot of each departmental budget. I've got current year original budget, proposed budget for 23, dollar change, percentage change. And again, I just show this so that you can see from departmental how big their change was, positive, negative, that sort of thing. One item that I do want to comment on here is under community grants, we show $1,016,422 as our budgeted amount for fiscal year 23. That dollar amount is, we calculate that based, there's a formula that we use. What this, what you don't see here is there's $210,000 of the community grant allocation that's in the bed tax fund that we funded for the Visitors Bureau the last several years. So that's one comment. The other comment I wanted to make is with the tobacco excise tax fund, we have additional opportunities to allocate money out of that particular fund for very specific purposes. And without getting into, I haven't really dug into it that in depth, but I suspect that certain requests from the clinic or from APIA would meet those requirements, and then council could contemplate those or make the decision based on whether they reduce this and move it over to there, or whether they allocate greater amounts or, you know, larger amounts under the general fund program. With that, I will pause. I suspect there's going to be some questions.
Any comments, questions? Telephone? Councilman Coleman?
Well, since you brought it up, that was one of my questions, because I guess I was a little confused on how we're going to deal with that. So we had, so since you're there, and asked, said something about it. So we've got tobacco tax, $170,000 in our budget. So how are we going to deal with this? Because I think we're pretty specific that that is supposed to be a single purpose for tobacco base. I mean, so is that money then being put into our this total revenues? And I think how do you keep track of that so that it doesn't get spent where it should be spent?
With respect to the tobacco tax, the revenues are reported in a separate fund, similar to how we record the 1% sales tax, the bed tax, the E911. It all goes into a very, I mean, it has its own fund, so we have our own tracking system related to that. And any monies that come out of there have to meet the requirement. And I put in, I believe it's in the memo, because I'm not seeing it on the PowerPoint presentation, where I specifically mention, is it in here, Margie, where we talk about the code? And maybe it's under, I'm sorry, it isn't. It's under special revenue funds. So if you want, we can talk about that now in terms of the criteria, or we can wait until we get to the special revenue funds in the presentation.
I can wait.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Next slide, Margie. Again, just another way to present the information. Show personnel, non-personnel, then again, I broke out the school support and the community grants. One of the items I didn't mention on the previous slide with respect to the school support, the amount that you see in the budget reflects their request, which clearly has not been decided upon or voted upon by council, but this is what their request is. Next slide, Margie. And this is the information with respect to the non-personnel operating expenditures. Again, you see this on page 88, but I've presented 22, 23 change dollar amount, or dollar amount change, a percentage change. And this is really based more on the directive from city manager to staff to hold the line as best we could. And the struggle being that when you have earmarked 3% increases for personnel, typically based on a CBA or Title III schedule, it's a little bit more challenging to do that. And this, you know, these budgets reflect, you'll see several of them have reductions on the non-personnel side for that reason. And I will pause for questions.
Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I'm just, not to pick on public safety, but that's a pretty big increase, 31%.
They have
non-personnel. Right?
And Jay can certainly add to it, but when we went through, we questioned that too, when we had conversations with, when the city manager and I met with Chief King, that was a question. There is a fair amount of training that is required for their staff, whether it's himself as chief or the deputy chief or corrections or police officers, and more than likely there's travel associated with that. This reflects that, and it's my understanding that those are not items that have been budgeted in prior years, and that makes up a significant portion of that increase.
Okay, yeah, no, travel is expensive, so, okay, thanks.
Councilman Bell?
Just along those lines real quick, is that training that hasn't been done before, or is it?
Some of it deals, Mayor, Council, is Director King. Some of the training deals with annual training that has to be done each year to maintain certified use for firearms, taser, other pieces of equipment. Some of it actually deals with trying to identify the ability to have an officer go out for train the trainer type programs. That way we can actually bring them back and they can then certify the whole department instead of trying to send out every officer for a certain type of training. And then also we have the typical, you know, Alaska Academy that we have to send officers out for. So it's a combination of the standard police academy continuing education hours that are required by statute and by a certain piece of equipment requirement, and also the identification for the need for train the trainer type programs. And where we can save money is to identify the train the trainer programs versus trying to send everybody off for the same type of training. And that's what we were trying to look at, was how we could save money, and that was one option, was train the trainer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, continue.
Okay, Margie, next slide, please. I wanted to point out the personnel costs included in the general fund budget do not include any potential changes as a result of the ongoing union negotiations, which will then be followed by a Title III review. So we fully expect that some of those personnel costs, we fully expect the personnel costs will increase as a result of those negotiations. We just don't know at what dollar amount at this point. But, and so we didn't want to include that in the budget, but just really that's just to make you aware that those are coming. Next slide, Margie. And this touches on the directors were instructed to challenge each line item. And to be honest with you, when we met with each director, both on the general fund side and on the proprietary fund side, we budgeted an hour for each one, and we often went over. We probably spent between, with the city manager and I and the directors, we probably spent a total of 15 to 20 hours in total going through these with the different directors, trying to get an understanding of what was going on within their budget, what was leading, what leads up to any significant changes they may have, that sort of thing. And we challenge them on certain items where they have a large dollar amount annually for a budget, but historically very little spending. And we feel we've made those adjustments. But it goes both ways, where you've got some, as Chief King was mentioning, you've got some training items that maybe haven't been budgeted for properly in the past that we wanted to pick up on. I've highlighted a few items here that I don't believe you will see in your memo in terms of significant changes within each budget. And I wanted to call out specifically under the second bullet point here under the information systems. The city has what's quickly becoming an antiquated phone system. And support will expire at the end of 2022. Phones, hardware to purchase for those phones has become increasingly difficult to find. It used to be you could get it through overstock type retailers. Now they're going to Amazon and eBay. And so that cost of that phone system is $225,000. $144,000 of that is budgeted operationally for the general fund. And you'll see that in the IS information services budget. Information systems. The other $81,000 is spread across the proprietary funds, and you'll see it as in the line item hardware software, and it's allocated based on handsets within each department. And before I get to the next slide, I was going to ask if anybody had any questions.
Councilman Robinson.
Yes, the second to the last bullet point there. A contract for commercial and residential lease rate studies. Is that for the city, that lease to lease, or?
I think not necessarily just the city. This discussion came up as we were evaluating the housing proprietary fund, and we haven't gone through any sort of evaluations for rental leases in several years. And so that discussion led to this. Bill can probably speak to it much better than I can, but I know that was kind of the starting point. And it came as part of our director meetings on the budget process.
So, yeah, and the other part of that question, is it going to include lease rates for some of the lease rates for the ports and that?
Bill, do you want to respond to that?
It's my understanding that Ports does its own. It's a little more unique than, for example, what we're doing, have done. We usually every 5 years, I think, we try and update that study so we can make sure that the lease rents that we're charging for, say, our real estate are in line. I mean, like I can say, I've lived at Apex for 5 years and rent hasn't gone up. So, but it's a question about whether it will come back that we can do both commercial and residential. But as far as how Ports does it, Peggy, I just confirmed with her, they do their own for that. I don't think we get that all in one umbrella just because of the difference in how that operates versus your typical lease space for commercial and residential.
So what commercial properties do we lease?
Good question. It's in there. It was always there for the commercial and residential. And it's in as both, but I think we're going to focus on the residential.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Continue. Okay.
Next slide, Margie. Here we talk a little bit about a question about the public safety and the training that Chief King addressed. I don't have anything else to add to this line item or this slide, other than to the last bullet point. In the past, so if y'all remember, 2018 public safety was divided up, fire EMS was carved out, and in that process we allocated utility costs to each department based on square footage, that sort of thing. What we've determined is that it just really makes more sense to charge it to one, let them bear the whole thing, adjust their budget accordingly, and it just makes some of the accounting side of it a little bit cleaner. And that will explain a portion of the increase on public safety because they're now absorbing that and a reduction on the fire side. And again, I will pause for questions before I move on to the next slide.
Anyone on the telephone have a question? case you fell asleep there. No, I guess not. On the public safety building, is there 100% fire department EMS still in that building or in other facilities?
The fire still has, they still lease the Mackinac building, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. And so you will see some utility costs under their budget specifically as it relates to that building. But in terms of, I don't believe they staff it on a regular basis. Yeah, I'm getting a head shake from Fire Chief.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else? Okay, continue, thanks.
Okay, Margie, next slide. This is just some background information on the CMMP and capital outlay. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that. Bill already stole the thunder. The last two items, capital outlay, primarily associated. When you look at the detailed expenditure budget, there's three sections that you'll typically see. First section is personnel. Second section is non-personnel operating cost. Third section is capital outlay. And you'll notice from year to year, there are certain departments that don't have a whole lot, or they have some this year, but not for several years thereafter. That's primarily associated with rolling stock, but it also does include printers and copiers, simply because they meet that threshold, and typically that threshold for the standalone purchase type items is $10,000. I'm going to go ahead and pause there because that concludes the general fund, to see if there were any questions with respect to the general fund for areas that I may not have covered.
Was this where Councilman Coleman's question comes in or not?
We do have a slide for the special revenue funds coming up. Okay. So
well, we'll hold that question.
She can sit on the edge of her seat for just a short time longer.
Okay. Dennis? Oh, Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. With the school support that we pay, given that we have a 10.5 mil rate right now, the increase in the property taxes, can we get a number of what, how much is going to change the state's contribution as opposed to what we are required to pay? Because with the higher property values, it's going to change that formula. So I'd like to see a number from what it is now under the scenario of a 10.5 mil rate and what the increase in the property tax has gone up as to what we're going to be required to provide to the school, and what kind of reduction that's going to equate to by the state's requirement to for their portion. You understand where I'm coming from on that?
I do. I don't want to deflect the question, but I feel like that might be more appropriate to ask the school. I mean, I'm not sure how to respond to your question specifically. I don't know the answer to that. We can certainly do some research. I believe that the school is on the agenda for tomorrow evening for their presentation. And I can see what I can find tomorrow before the meeting. But I don't know the answer to your question.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect you to have the answer. But just to be aware, I'm going to be searching for that answer because with the increase in the property tax, is going to reduce the amount the state gives to us for the school, and it'll increase the amount that we are required to give the school.
So can you repeat that statement? I thought I heard you say that we receive money from the state specifically earmarked for the school.
The school receives money, okay? But the higher our property values are, the less the state is required to give to the school.
Okay.
And the more the city is required to give to the school. So that's kind of the number I'm searching for, because it's going to take out of our budget.
Sure.
The requirement. So
no, and I respect that. Right. Again, not to pass the buck. the information that's in the budget before you only reflects what their request was.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
I get to move on?
You get to move.
All right. So we've waited now. We get to talk about some of the things that Sherry was interested in. But first of all, I want to stop. On this slide, we've got the 1% sales tax fund and the bed tax fund, which y'all are familiar with. The 1% sales tax fund revenue fluctuates in conjunction with the general fund sales tax revenue. The amount that we budget for the 1% sales tax is exactly half of what is budgeted in the general fund. So in other words, of the 3%, 2% of that is for the general fund unrestricted use. 1% goes to the 1% sales tax fund, oddly enough, and it's set aside for construction. The bed tax fund is, I mean, in terms of the name of it, that it's self-explanatory. I want to say it was probably 2019, 2020 budget, or 2020 fiscal year, where we got to a situation where we were not collecting, we were paying out more in community support than what we were collecting for the bed tax. We really took a hit in FY20 and 21 in that bed tax collection due to COVID. And you see that there's a $50,000 increase on the revenue side, fully with the expectation folks are going to start traveling again. That's really, I don't want to say it's a huge guess on my part, but I think that makes sense as to what's to expect. The contribution to the Visitors Bureau of $210,000, I left that the same from what it's been the last couple of years. Certainly, that's part of the grant program, and council can alter that if they so choose. But at the end of the day, what you're left with is you're collecting less than what you're paying out, and we've done that now for 2 or 3 years. There is some cushion there. I'd have to actually look to see what that actual dollar amount is, but this isn't a situation where you can continue to operate with a deficit or in budget for it as such. Next slide, Margie. The two items on this slide are related to the new funds that were put into place. We started collecting an E911 enhancement fee. I believe we started that sometime in the fall. And in going through that setup, we estimate that we will collect about $75,000 a year in revenue. That money is earmarked for specific purposes related to the E911. It could be for training, certain types of equipment. But again, there's very specific requirements for that. And then the tobacco tax fund, that was set up in the fall also. And through that process, we estimated annual revenue of about $750,000. We started collecting some money early in 2022. When I was putting the slide deck together, we had collected $88,000 year to date. And so obviously that would have been all during, you know, since January. And here's the part that Sherry's been waiting for. This use is dedicated, and this is in code, for public health, for the benefit of public health programs or tobacco education and cessation programs in Unalaska. And the potential recipients that we've identified are the clinic and APIA. And I'm going to pause there for questions, comments.
Councilman Coleman.
Yeah, are you ready for general fund questions?
No, we're done with the general fund. You missed your chance.
Well, I can wait to the end of the whole thing. And
no, ask. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your patience. And I really, really enjoyed the fact how you said that when we talked about the bed tax, the 210 is somehow this magic number, and I'm not sure how that came about, and that now we're adding $35,000 to it in order to make up the 210 that somehow we have is a goal to reach. And you said that is not sustainable. We can't do that. And yet we have a budget that says our expenses are outweighing our revenues. To me, that's not a balanced budget. So I'm going to argue with you on what is a balanced budget. So yes, we have money out there that has been left over from previous years that we are able to use, but I reflect on the fact that we continue to outspend what we make. And obviously, you're the messenger here, so.
Please don't shoot me.
So I guess that's my big point here is when I look at bottom line, I look at the fact that $4.2 million has to come from somewhere. And I guess as we get further in this, it would like to know where that somewhere is and how much money is in that somewhere. Because as we continue to go down this road, that somewhere is going to dry up eventually. It just can't. It's not sustainable. It's great that we have it, but I think it, and I know we've worked on our fiscal policy, and I know we're trying to divide all of that out, but there's an allocation there. There's the bucket of money that we like to use, and now we're dividing up to many buckets. And I would like to know, just like I would in my own personal expenses and my own personal finances, is if I'm going to be grabbing from a surplus somewhere, I want to know how much is in there. So I have never known that number, and every time we pull from there, apparently it magically appears. And I worry that somewhere that isn't going to keep reappearing.
So did you and Council Member Bell get together before the meeting and kind of compare notes?
No, we don't talk. But
because
I mean,
he asked the same question. And I think there's a lot of different items that go into an answer to that. And without, at the risk of sounding a little bit condescending, because I don't want to come across that way, this is a budget, and it doesn't necessarily reflect where we end up. And you've heard me say this next comment. Historically, the city has done very well. They've budgeted conservatively on both the revenue side and the expenditure side with respect to the general fund. So they've always had a win-win, and that adds to that bucket, as you say. And even though we budget for, so we've got an operating surplus. That's part of the reason I put that information in there, so that we can see. So in some respects, you can think that that surplus is contributing to this bucket that we pull money from later. And over time, as we continue to make contributions to that bucket, and I'm not talking the last 2 or 3 years, because frankly, for the last 2 or 3 years, we have not, the budget that we've presented has been either balanced or surplus on the operating side. But when you get to the very bottom after your capital outlay and your capital project contributions, it's negative, and we have to pull from the magic bucket to get it to zero. And I don't know what the situation was prior to that. You know, in terms of how much is in the bucket that we can pull from, I think part of that discussion goes to what do we have from a dollars and cents standpoint set aside. So we've had those fiscal sustainability discussions. Somewhere around $160 million is what's in the bucket. But within that, you've got certain amounts carved out to go to different places. For me to give you a specific dollar amount, I would guess it's probably somewhere between 20 and 30 million. But please don't hold me to that. I can certainly do some additional research. But I know we had some of this discussion when we were going through the fiscal sustainability and trying to determine how much we should set the permanent fund for. Because there's $160 million in total. Let's just use that, because it's an easy number for my pea brain to figure out. About half of that is for the proprietary funds. And that's to their operating cash and that sort of thing. And it's divvied up amongst each of the proprietary funds. And then you've got a certain portion that's set us, that's going to be set aside for the permanent fund, and a certain portion that's set aside for the rainy day fund. And so part of that discussion we had with council was just making them aware that if you start pulling too much out of that for the permanent fund or for the rainy day fund, you'll leave yourself a lot less flexibility in terms of, as you say, pulling out of the bucket to meet your needs on a funding basis annually. Does that help at all?
So there is a facet of that I component that even though you may not present it here, I would like to have that in, like, really, because it is my responsibility.
I get it.
To make sure that we are spending appropriately and not overspending and beyond what our means is. And when you look at this on paper, that's exactly what it's telling me we're doing.
So,
and to be comfortably, and to be able to be comfortable in saying, oh, yeah, for this is, you know, this extra 4.2 is a reasonable amount to pull out for these extra, these projects, basically what they're for.
Sure. And again, there are several components to, or several responses to that comment. So, as you know, as I mentioned earlier, we've gone through and redesigned some of these budget reports. The expectation is the monthly financial reports that you will see won't be this month, it'll probably be next month, will be more along the lines of the format that you see tonight, both on the general fund side and the proprietary fund side. But in addition to that, because I don't think that really answers what you're getting at, I would like to include a narrative. I think Councilmember Robinson alluded to that a couple of meetings ago. Include a brief narrative that provides some highlights. But in addition to that, share with council where are we at in terms of how much is in our cash bank account, how much do we have invested for short term, and how much is in each of those buckets, and then gets to a total. That's the goal that I want to have available for council. I don't have that yet. So right now I just kind of go with it's about $160 million, knowing that some of that is earmarked for other things. And now I forgot the other part I was going to say. That's the main one, just that we're changing our reports so you can more easily see that. And then I will be presenting or will include in future monthly reports, again, not starting tomorrow, probably with the May report, what those cash and investment balances are, so you can more easily see where we're at to fund some of these shortfalls.
That would be a good start for me.
Okay.
Let's see. Onward. Sales tax, 27.5%. I know you put this in your memo that you're expecting. That's a pretty big increase for sales tax. I've read it. I just like, wow. And we're hanging our hat a lot on that one to see that comes through. So I don't know.
We had this discussion in January also. I know there was concern. I believe that was a concern that you had raised. And I don't have that memo in front of me, but I went through a lot of analysis to try to determine what the right number was for sales tax. And historically, prior to my arrival in 2019, there was an established relationship between the price of a 55-gallon barrel of North Slope crude to the amount of sales tax that we collected. In essence, what it was saying was there's a high dependence on fuel prices. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, for the fiscal year 20 budget, that correlation was gone. And so I didn't use it for the 20 or the 21 budgets, or the 22 budget for that matter. But I revisited it in January as I was putting this together, went through the same process. That correlation relationship has returned. One important comment, and I made it at that point too, it demonstrates, to establish a correlation, all it says is that when this number changes too, and they move at about the same rate. It doesn't necessarily mean that one causes the other. And you can, I'm kind of a numbers nerd, so I've seen some of these where historically you can look at two sets of totally unrelated data and one moves and the other one moves along the same way. So it could, you could easily make the argument, yeah, you could say that they correlate to one another, well, there's a relationship there, but there's not a cause and effect. I think that's different here. I do feel confident that there, because we were so reliant on the fishing industry and those vessels fill up, we know we sell a ton of fuel locally, not the city, but locally there's a ton of fuel and the city collects the sales tax for that. And there's a lot of support industries that also tie to the fishing industry so that you can make that general sense. And in looking at the price of North Slope crude, I pull that information from a state-published revenue book. They publish books in the spring and in the fall. They provide historical data, they provide current data, and they estimate out what that cost of a 55-gallon barrel of fuel is going to be, or oil, for the next year. When I set this up, I based it on what they projected that dollar amount to be. I feel confident, particularly now with the way the price of fuel has gone, that that's a fairly safe number. And if you look at it, yes, it's a 27% increase. But if you look at our current year, we have well exceeded budget. I'll be presenting financial information tomorrow night. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but through February, we were already north of 100% of budget. So we've got four more months where we're going to probably end up 110, 115% of budget. So if you take that into account, that 27% increase isn't nearly as much as it seems.
Thank you. You can't answer this one. I already just alluded to it, but the bed tax and why we continue to subsidize that 210 is this number that goal that, and I'm like, bed tax is bed tax. It's what you get, and it goes into community grants, and UVB usually is allocated that portion.
Can I respond to that briefly?
Yeah, of course.
So in terms of determining the formula for what goes into that, what we set aside for the community grant program, it's 5 years of general fund revenues averaged, an average of those 5 years, and then we add to it the most current year's bed tax revenue. Last year was $43,000 that it contributed, not a whole lot. But it, you know, this is more Bill's bailiwick than mine, but it's my understanding that council goes through and determines what those amounts are for the recipients of those community grants. So I suspect there was some point in the past where council decided on 210, and it just hasn't changed in terms of what council has approved for that particular, for the Visitors Bureau. Council will have the opportunity to reevaluate that again and adjust it as they see fit. And certainly when we put the budgets together or update the budget based on comments tonight and what's approved at the 26th council meeting, we will certainly change things. And the next round of budget will more accurately reflect where you want those community grant dollars to go and or to whom and where we put it within the budget. And not to steal any more of your thunder, but to proactively address your the tobacco tax question, the current formula does not contemplate that. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there's nothing in there that says, you know, like right now, the bed tax revenue is included in that in terms of calculating the amount available. The tobacco tax, excise tax revenue is not included in there at all.
Right.
And, you know, in terms of, I'd have to look to see how, I don't know if it's in code, I suspect it is, how the code is written in terms of that community grant support program, if it's strictly supposed to be charged all to the general fund or what the flexibility is, but there might be an opportunity there to make some changes if necessary so that we can include all of this in the calculation and make it a little bit less gray.
Right, and then just one more, the E911 revenues or the revenue that's generated in that's supposed to go back to the department for that system including projects and any training and such. Is that, and so that is in their budget?
It is not in their departmental budget.
Okay.
So we have to track both the revenues and the expenditures completely separate from anything else. So we'll record the revenues for the E-91 in that, and we'll record any associated expenditures all together in one fund. It does not go into the general fund. A special revenue fund is different than the general fund, and typically they are different because there are certain strings attached to the revenue that comes into those. If you think about it, the 1% sales tax, that's used for construction projects. The bed tax is essentially used for the Visitors Bureau. E-911 is to support the E-911 program, and tobacco tax is for, you know, the benefit of the community and tobacco, you know, cessation programs, that sort of thing.
Right, but the 1% doesn't have any strings attached. It just goes in the bucket.
My understanding is in code. I mean, unless that's changed.
It is not in code.
Okay.
So I don't know how they keep it. I don't know how it's kept separate.
Well,
it
we
was
recorded.
Intended for projects.
No, and that's how it's used. As I described how we track the E-911 items, the bed tax, the 1% sales tax, and the tobacco tax are done the same way. They're all carved out separately from everything else. Where if you look at the general fund, they have different departments, but it's all under, and I'm sorry, I'm getting really technical here. It's all under one large fund, the general fund, but we set it aside so that we can track each department separately, like a cost center would do in a for-profit entity. You have revenue centers, profit centers, cost centers. Each of those departments are more or less a cost center because we look at it that way. And from a revenue standpoint on the general fund side, we don't record revenue to PCR. We don't record revenue to public safety. It all goes in one big bucket. Does that help?
Okay. Yes, we can talk later too. Okay. I don't want to take any more time. Thank you for answering the questions.
We good?
Yeah. All right. Go ahead and go.
Next slide, Margie.
On the sales tax, for years, we've always budgeted a whole lot less than we received. Some of the years were almost $2 to $3 million more in sales tax. I expect that is probably going to be the same this year, just due to the cost of living. The sales of groceries have gone through the roof. So, as well as fuel. So I think that at 27%, we're probably going to blow that out of the water this year, in my opinion.
Well, again, remember, that's from last year's original budget. We didn't adjust it upwards to take into account the huge increase we've had in the fuel price. But again, we're doing so well this year. I would agree with you. I'm not sure I agree that it's going to blow it out of the water, but I feel confident we'll at least meet it. Okay, moving on, next slide. This is just in terms of the proprietary funds, there's a lot more information in the memo that you have as opposed to what is up here. And I put a couple of comments for those particular proprietary funds that had significant changes. So for the last three where their changes were fairly small, I didn't add anything. But on the electric side, I mean, obviously you can see their revenue it's getting a significant bump due to COPA, which is the price of fuel, passing it along through the rates, which I'm sure many of you are feeling at home. I'm sorry. The others are really just rate increase adjustments, the other utilities. And I have a note here that I'm supposed to pause. Oh, I will. Sorry, one other comment. So if you look at the budget and the way each proprietary fund is laid out in the summary section, that will more closely align with how the monthly financial reports will look. Again, the goal here is to allow... Margie, why don't you go ahead... I'm going to pause to see if there's any comments here, and then I wanted to walk you through the changes in the report. So I was getting ahead of myself. I apologize.
Hey, anyone have a comment on the phone? Okay, anyone here? Okay, Jim.
Okay, Margie, next slide. The thought behind changing these proprietary fund reports was to help directors get a better sense as to operationally, how are they doing? And in this case, operationally is cash basis. So I heard it tonight in terms of concerns regarding depreciation. Depreciation is a non-cash item. It impacts rates because it's kind of a savings bank that you use later to repair or replace a particular asset. And, but really, the items a director can control in any given fiscal year or effect would be revenue and certain operating expenditures, those cash-based ones. So that's going to be personnel. That's going to be essentially everything but depreciation. And so the math is fairly straightforward. Take your revenue, you subtract out your operating expenditures, again, everything except for depreciation. That provides you an operating profit or loss, hopefully it's a profit, on a cash basis. Then we subtract out depreciation, and that gets your operating profit, really, from operating profit for that proprietary fund, as if you were thinking about it in terms of a business. The last items are a couple of adjustments for non-operating items, and that's going to be your debt service, essentially your interest expense, and any transfers that are included as, you know, capital projects. And then you get to the bottom line, which shows a net profit or a loss. And historically, so if we go on, so I want to pause here just to discuss or see if there's any questions that folks might have with respect to the change. And you can, if you look on page 119 of the council packet, you'll see what this looks like. But I wanted to see if anybody had any questions specifically as it related to the changes in the way that report looks.
Any questions or comments for Jim? Okay.
Okay.
Continue.
So, next slide. This is from the budget, and I would think your goal should be that from an operational standpoint, again, on a cash basis, so this is going to be Sherry's checkbook. You want to have more coming into the checkbook than you're paying out. And you can see that the first five were in pretty good shape. Last two were not so good a shape. You can see from their budgets show that they're budgeting a loss on a cash basis. And when you look at housing, I think that supports the need to go through a process and make sure that the rates that we're using are appropriate. And, you know, when we had this discussion, there's a lot that goes into housing. It isn't necessarily designed to make a profit. It is, in some respects, in many respects, it's a marketing tool the city can use to offer employment to folks and say, hey, we've already got housing for you. You have to pay for it, but we have this housing for you. And so it was not ever really designed to make money. But still, that's a pretty decent loss. So I just wanted to point that out, for each of those proprietary funds. Margie, next slide. And here I'm providing a little bit of context.
I've got a question for you there, Jeff.
Oh.
Councilman Bell.
I think it was just a comment saying, we're looking at the housing fund as making a great loss. It's not operated as a proprietary fund, so of course it's going to show a big loss. So.
No, and I get that. But it's included in the proprietary funds, and that's why I made the comment. And I fully acknowledging that the goal there isn't necessarily to generate a profit. There's other aspects that go into that, but it does tend to jump out at you. And I do think over time that loss has grown. which is part of the reason why we're going through the going through and doing a lease study for residential properties in Unalaska. That's one of the goals, I believe, is to do that. So, Margie, next slide. So this slide provides a bit of context in terms of you've got fiscal year 2021 actual information, you've got the original budget for 22, and then you've got the budget for 23. And the far right column shows the change from the original 22 budget. And really, this is in somewhat of just a data point to give an idea as to how we've budgeted in the past, what we've done operationally, you know, actual information, and where we're at this year. And now I have a comment or a note here to pause. So any questions?
Any questions? Anybody on the phone have a question? Okay.
Okay. Good. Next slide, Margie. Really, these are the last two slides have to do with just showing what the dollar amount for the capital projects are and what fund is providing those. The support for those. So I can certainly answer questions. That's probably more of a CMMP. This was just more for additional information. I do have a comment, Margie, if you can go to the next slide. I know there's a fair amount of discussion regarding the dredging project, and I want to say it's probably a good month ago. Peggy and I have had a bit of a discussion back and forth email regarding the entrance channel dredging. It's a very spendy project, and the discussion is really more around where does it belong? Is it an asset, and is it going to be is it going to be depreciated? Is it general fund? Is it ports, harbors? And I'm still doing some research on this, but it appears to, so some of that discussion was I asked the question, who's going to maintain it? Response was there's really no maintenance involved, but if anybody's going to, it's going to be the Army Corps of Engineers. And back in my auditing days, one of the things that we would look at, I worked a lot with Indian tribal governments, and one of the items that we would look at, if there was a road that was being constructed where the tribe may have had a portion of the funding cost, but some of that may have come from the Department of Transportation as well, at the end of the day, whose responsibility was it to maintain that road? Was it going to be the tribe's responsibility? Was it going to be the feds? Whose was it? And typically, that's your decision making. If the tribe was responsible for maintenance of that road, it would be a tribal asset infrastructure. If the feds were, then those costs associated with the construction of that road that would be contributed by the Indian tribe were an expense. There was no asset generated. And so that's part of the discussion that Peggy and I are having, because it's typically, when you think of a capital asset, and this goes to some of the questions that were asked tonight or comments, if you have an asset within a proprietary fund, your goal is that in some form or fashion, it's going to generate revenue for you. And this really isn't that. And I would feel probably a little bit differently if it was just for the benefit of the city. But my understanding in talking to Peggy was there's a lot, it isn't just the city that benefits from that. There's other docks that will benefit. So I just wanted to share that with you. I'm not trying to create or lead into a different discussion or, you know, go down that road. It was really more, I didn't want to come up when they were going through the CMMP. I didn't feel like that was the appropriate timing for it. But I do want to mention it here that we are considering if there is an asset, where does it go and who depreciates it? Again, I got to do some more research, but my initial trying to compare it to a road tells me that it's probably not an asset anywhere for the city. Because at the end of the day, if there's any maintenance, the city's not on the hook for it. We would probably want to make sure to get that in some formal manner. But again, that's my understanding. So I really do appreciate your time this evening. And any questions that you may have regarding the presentation tonight or what's in the memo or any particular items in the budget, ask away.
Well, thank you, Jim. We have any questions for Jim? Anybody on the phone? Bell, Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I'll just recap kind of where Sherry was going with her questions, with Councilman Coleman's questions there. And really, it just comes down to that bucket, those buckets of money that we're pulling out for to balance the budget or for pulling into proprietary funds or transferring into proprietary funds. It's just understanding over time, is that bucket emptying out? Is it getting full? Is it staying the same? And just that was kind of the gist of where I was going with that.
Yeah, and there's a couple of different factors, particularly when you're talking about a proprietary fund. When I was going through the report changes, I specifically talked about the depreciation line item. It's not cash. It's designed so that they can set aside cash to cover certain costs, maintenance, repairs, replacement. So they have a piggy bank, so to speak, that they can dip into later. And their rates are affected by it. I get all of that. But to some respect, that's the pot of money that they can dip out of later. The general fund is like that to a certain degree, but probably not as much as the proprietary funds.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Anyone else? Well, thanks, Jim. Appreciate the information, and I have some question, but I'll wait till after I think about it a bit. After what you've been explaining, it kind of makes sense, but in a way, I wonder why anybody would question a dredging project that for, I don't know, how long has it been on the books to try to dredge? 4 or 5 years? And it was needed because we get bigger ships in here. I mean, that's the only real reason that I see on it. So I guess to answer your question, where is the city value? You have to look at the city itself and the port and how it's developed and a little bit more about what this community is trying to diversify into. Because we're not going to have fishing forever. If anything else, the fuel business will put them out of business. So we're not far behind them.
Yeah, and I appreciate all of that. From an accounting standpoint, we look at it a little bit differently. And I'm not arguing the value to the city in terms of what that dredging will do. It's really more we look at it from a standpoint, where does it make sense to put it as an asset, if at all? So last thing I wanted to mention in terms of the budget, y'all had questions. I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes the question will come and go, and I'll be laying in bed at night, and it'll come up, and I'm like, I wish I would ask that. If you have questions, feel free to ask via email, or write them down, and I'll be here again tomorrow night just for your questions. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Done?
I'm thinking about the dredging project. It's a benefit to Unalaska as a total. And right now, are we taking that money out of the port operating? Okay, that's coming from the general fund, that money we're putting in there?
Yeah.
Good, because I don't think we should treat it as an asset. It isn't an asset to us. It's a benefit, but I don't know that we can treat it as an asset that we can depreciate or anything like that. So it's an oddball.
It is. And 25 million, 24, roughly? No, but I'm just thinking like total project cost. Okay. It's a significant project. And I'm just going to say 25 because that's an easy number. We're on the hook for a quarter of it maybe or less. And the Corps picking up the remainder of the costs. So to us, it's not a huge, I mean, from the project standpoint, our contribution isn't that significant, even though the dollar amount is. But anyway, that was just some other information. But we have paid for that and budgeted out of the general fund.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Any further questions?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilman Dungal?
Yeah, maybe we'll treat it as an investment. But I sure appreciate the presentation there, Jimmy. This thing is a lot more clearer than the previous one, and information I receive a lot better on my end. I sure appreciate all the hard work between you and the city manager on this one. There's a lot clearer picture than the previous presentation we had, and I appreciate all the hard work you guys put into it. Thank you.
Thanks, Councilman Toe. Anyone else?
Last minute
discussion, comment? Bill?
I hate to interrupt this broadcast, but you should probably know, if you don't already, that this is Jim's last Monday with us, I believe. He's announced he's not coming back. And we just got him trained, like you say, so now we have good presentations. He's going to work for Legos, I think. They want someone to count all the red ones and yellow ones. But I thought it would be an opportunity for you to, if you do have questions, this is the last visit here. His contract is, his boss won't let him come out anymore or something. So anyway, it's kind of crucial. I've enjoyed working with him. It hasn't always been easy, but when you get with new people, you got to work your bugs out. And it has been interesting to work with him out here on the CMMP projects and doing all this. Every year we have a discussion on what is capital, what isn't capital, what fund should something go in, and everybody does drive us crazy, but we've enjoyed having him here. So thought you should know if you didn't already. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Are we going to still be dealing with your company, or
so
institutional knowledge going to go away?
I appreciate Bill selling me out. This wasn't my decision. This was my boss's decision. And what I've conveyed to the city manager and to my staff is the formal letter that was sent out indicated I would be available for projects. So clearly the budget process is a project. The audit prep and going through all of the audit process is a project. We've got some other projects that we're working on that I will see through to completion. What I've also told staff is I will be available as much as I can, but the push behind it has more to do with capacity than anything else. And we've been here for, well, we as in me. My first trip up was April 1st, 2019. And Brian Stafford met me at the airport. And the explanation was, hey, we expect you're going to be here for at least 6 months. Well, we certainly achieved that. If you think about it, apart from the four-month sabbatical I had last year, I've been here for 3 years on an interim basis. And because of the four-month sabbatical, and I don't mean to seem this as an excuse, but when the city hired a finance director last January, I didn't have any work because they'd hired somebody. And the nature of my work is I don't get paid unless I'm working. I'm not on a salary. So my boss and I decided that at that point she was going to start fulfilling up that pipeline. And it's taken a year to do so. So I just, unfortunately, I don't have the time to continue to come out for a week to 10 days at a time to do it. I'll always be available by phone. I'll be available via email, and I will help out where I can as the city continues to go through the process of finding a finance director that can be here on a daily basis. Unfortunately, that's not going to be me. I've had a few staff ask me if I'd be interested, and I have a wife and a dog at home, and the selling point, what I've learned in going through finance director recruitment is it's always the spouse. And I'm not throwing my wife under the bus. I just know that the spouse makes a huge, plays a huge role in that process. So it does. Happy wife, happy life. So since this will be my, well, tomorrow will be my last council meeting here in person, but I'll go ahead and say thank you. I've really appreciated, I haven't got to know the council members all that much, probably would have if I was here every day, but I've really enjoyed the experience. And one of the things that I want to say in parting is, and I've told my staff this, and I think I've said it in front of council before when we've gone through audit reports, this is the best staff that I've ever worked with. Typically, the types of engagements or the work that I do is coming in and cleaning up a train wreck. And this is not that. I have folks that are incredibly engaged, they're passionate, and they're dedicated to their work. And my success here is in large part, almost exclusively, because of them. So I want to thank them for that, but I also want to thank council and all of the directors that I've worked with for providing me the challenges that I've had to then solve, but also being people that I can talk to, share thoughts with, and develop a bit of a friendship with them. And it's been a great experience for me. So with that, thank you.
Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. All right. Now we'll receive public comments on these items. It'll be a 3-minute per person. Does anyone wish to speak? Anyone on Zoom or phone?
No, sir.
Are there any council directives to the city manager? And don't have to motion out of work session, do we? Nope. Having completed all items on the agenda, we are adjourned at 7:55 p.m. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.